I'm Coach Seb, and this is Running New Mexico.
Today, my guest is Pat Henry, cross-country and track and field coach at Texas A&M. He's got 36 national team titles in NCAA Division I. It's been 9 since you've joined Texas A&M in 2004. And in 2017, you were inducted into the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. Thank you for joining me.
You bet. It's a pleasure to talk to somebody from New Mexico. That's a good thing.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's hard to imagine someone in the state not being familiar with a Henry. But can you tell me a little bit about growing up around running the way you did, with your grandfather and father both being sprinters and coaches?
Yeah. You know, my grandfather, I was young enough that I didn't know my grandfather very well. I mean, I was just a little bit too young. I do remember him. But my grandfather was a football coach. He was the head football coach at Kansas. And he was a head football coach at Missouri, and then he was the head football coach at New Mexico. And at all of those schools in those years, the football coach was also the track coach. So right. Of course we were involved with track and field. And then Dad played football there at Albuquerque High School, and went to New Mexico. Dad coached with Hugh Hackett. Then Dad went into some administration, ended up being an assistant to the president of New Mexico. So he got out of coaching. But I have 4 brothers, and all 4 brothers, of course, Matt was the head coach at UNM. Mark was the assistant coach at UNM.
Right.
Both from Matt was head coach at West Mesa and then La Cueva. And then Mark was the head football coach at Highland High School. And then my younger brothers, Robin was never in education, but he worked around the city and worked around all their pools and ended up working down at whatever they call the building where they have the track right now. And then Timmy taught school in elementary school and junior high school, I'm sorry, and did a little bit of coaching, but not much. So now Matt's son is, of course, Kenny Henry. He's the head coach out at Cleveland. So we keep having coaches. The joke around our house, or for me, is always, I'm just glad they weren't bricklayers.
Yeah.
I'd probably be laying brick right now.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing just how not only that all of you have kind of gotten into coaching, but all of you have been really successful at it.
Well, we've been fortunate. We've had good success, and coaching has been good for all of us.
Did you run as a kid as well?
Yeah, I ran all the way through Del Norte. We went to Del Norte High School, and I was never very good, but I ran. Matt was the best one of all of us on
okay.
the track. And Mark ran as well. Timmy, Robin, all of them ran, and everybody played football. I was the only one that didn't play football. I was just way too little. I was 90 pounds. I wrestled at 90. I think it was 92 at that time at Del Norte when I was I was the littlest one of everybody. I went to UNM, of course, started at UNM, started running a little bit of track, and then I just decided I wasn't going to do that, and I was going to concentrate on my degree and concentrate on coaching.
And when did you know that coaching was something that you were going to get into?
I was probably about 7.
Oh, wow.
I knew what my dad and what my family had done as a profession. That's about the time I decided that sounds like what I'm probably going to want to do. And I was excited to do that. That was something that I wanted to do all my life. I wanted to be a physical educator. I wanted to work in public schools. I wanted to work in schools. I, you know, always had a dream of going and coaching. Once I got started, I had a dream of going on and coaching at another level. Other than high school, but took some time. I was, and finally ended up going on and going to a junior college and then going on
to have that dream at such a young age, and you've really made the most of it. That's for sure.
Well, you know, we got into it because it was big money.
Yeah.
Anybody who coaches track understands what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd all been smarter to go into football probably, but that's, you go for what you love, and I love the sport of track and field and the disciplines and what the sport teaches you about real world.
Right.
And so track has been always very close to me.
Well, I think, like you said, I mean, about 47 years now of coaching, I think it shows that you love it.
Yeah.
You know, you coached down in Hobbs for about 10 years. What was it like coaching high school?
Well, I loved Hobbs High School. Hobbs was very difficult for me to even leave. It's so many great people in Hobbs. We had great athletics at that time. From 72 to 82, Hobbs was a great place. The oil field was big time, and we had a great economy. So, and it's still that way. You know, Hobbs High School is the only thing that Hobbs really cares about.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was great in one high school town. I really loved it, and we had some great years, and it was tough to leave. It was tough to leave. It was actually hard to leave Albuquerque initially, just to, you know, because I left all my family. They all stayed in Albuquerque. But I just felt like I couldn't pass up the opportunity to go down to Hobbs. And so I took advantage of it and went down there, and it paid off. It was a great move for me.
Did you feel the same way when you made the jump up to junior college? It was an opportunity you had to take for yourself?
Well, JC was a little bit bigger a jump. When you start stepping into the college ranks, it's a little more unsure about your life at that time, because I have two children, and we just took a chance. I went to a junior college called Glenn Junior College in Brenham, Texas, and nobody had really ever heard of Glenn. I could have gone. It was two other schools that I could have gone to at that time. I was fortunate enough to be able to pick from about three schools that I interviewed at, but I went to Blinn because, first of all, nothing had really happened. And I felt like if something did happen, then the reason it did is because I had done a pretty good job, you know? So that would be a little bit of gratification, a little self-gratification, a little bit of understanding. And I'd have to coach all disciplines. I had to coach every event because I didn't have an assistant, but I had a president that wanted to be successful. And he was unique at that time in that track was important to him, and he wanted to try to be successful at it. So it was a good move for me. We won a couple of national championships at Blinn. We were second once or twice as well. So we had some great years there. We were 4 years at Blinn, and that was a big move. That was a big move. But it paid off for us. You know,
you've had a ton of success at the collegiate level now. And I think a lot of people, you know, who know of you know that, you know, what do you consider the key to building the success that you have had?
Well, the next jump was to go to LSU, of course, and being there for 17 years. And now next year will be my 17th year here at A&M too. So over all of those years, and it started high school. There's no difference in high school. There is in collegiate. For me, it's consistency. It's being there for the kids all the time, being consistent with what you do, being as fair to everybody involved as you can be. Those are two, I think, very key aspects of what have been helped me to be successful anyway. Once I think my athletes understand that we're serious about it, we're going to be consistent with our training, we're going to be consistent with everything we do, it's consistent with the discipline, we're consistent with just about everything we do, if they know that, then things start right. And if you care, the kids know it, athletes know it, they know if you care, they know if you have a work ethic, and that's very important as well. And so those have been the most important aspects of it. There's a lot more to it, of course, but those, if you're asking me a couple things that are important, those are the two important things to get things started.
No, I agree. And I think that's right. You know, the consistency, I think, really helps. And like you said, that the kids know that you care, that you're there to build them up.
Right. Right. And then the further I got into it, of course, I had a staff of five at The NCAA allowed me 5 at LSU, and I have 5 here at Texas A&M that are full-time assistants for me. Now I have another 5 volunteer assistants as well. I've got administrative assistant. I've got an assistant administrative assistant. So, you know, hiring people around you that have the same philosophies that you have.
Right.
And same ethic and are willing to work hard and are willing to treat your athletes the way you feel that they should be treated. I got to surround myself with people like that. And then that's then the next thing that's helped the program is that I've been fortunate enough to be able to hire good people for many years. That's been a key. Stability of staff. Everybody wants to know if there's stability of staff.
Right.
If you're a recruit and you're being recruited by somebody, you want to know that somebody's going to be there when you get there. And in many cases, that's not true. And that doesn't happen that way.
Right.
Or that person leaves a year later. You want to know that there's some stability, that the person that's recruiting you, the person that's talking about how you're running or you're lifting or your vaulting program or your jump program is going to go or throw program is going to go, you're asking those kinds of questions. And those that's the person you want to be with. And if that person leaves, then that's a problem for you. You already left your high school coach, and that's a hard one to leave there, especially if you're really good. And then you're coming into a program that has a whole lot of really good guys and gals, and you're just another one of the good people. You gotta feel good about that, you know, and that's sometimes the biggest challenge.
Listening to you talk about building those people around you, it kind of reminds me of an interview you recently did for Miles Splitt, and you talked a lot about building a team. How do you build that atmosphere when you have some kids that are coming from high school, they're used to, well, the distance do this thing, sprinters do that, jumpers and throwers are doing their own thing. You know, how do you build that as you get these kids coming into you?
I'm going to be careful about the people that I do recruit to the program. You know, I want to recruit people who want to be on a team, who look at our sport as being on a team. They want to be on a team. They don't. Being an individual is we're an individual sport. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And that's the way we coach. But you have team responsibilities. You have responsibility to the team all the time. So, you know, you got to recruit people who feel that way. I've had a lot of good athletes I've recruited that they can't say that's the way they want to be. They want to be the best sprinter. Or they want to be the best vaulter. And it's tough for them to think about having somebody that they have to even compete against in training because they never had to do that before.
Right.
And then you have some athletes that just cherish the opportunity of being around other people that are good. And in fact, they want to be around people that are better than them. So eventually, they're going to be the top dog. There's two different kinds of athletes. So there's lots of kinds of athletes, but that's a big decision for me in the recruiting process. And it really is. You just ask the question, do you want to be on a team?
Right.
You know, and if the athlete's being truthful with you, and they better be, because they're going to be in an environment they don't like if they're not, then you're going to know, yep, this is the guy or this is the lady that I want to offer a scholarship to, or this is a person that I just want to offer the opportunity to be in our program.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, recently things have changed. We have this COVID-19 virus going around, and it is definitely affecting everything. And you had made a comment after the NCAA had canceled the indoor meet. And I don't want to say it all, but just to paraphrase you, you acknowledged the fears behind the virus, but you reminded us that everyone was already there and around everybody. And you kind of questioned how the NCAA would handle the situation for these kids kind of missing out. My first question on that, do you still feel the same way? Is your gut reaction on that still feel the same?
Well, I think as a coach, you're always going to think that way. And I think our athletes were thinking the same way too. But, you know, every day this thing has changed.
Right.
I mean, it changed again today. I mean, every day we learn something different, and it's not good news. That's why we have people a lot smarter than me as a track coach. We got a lot of scientists out there that are telling us, listen, this is serious business. And I know you guys want to run in a circle and throw a steel ball farther than somebody else, but we're talking about life and death possibly here. So let's be cautious. And that's it's a learning time for everybody involved. You know, it was a learning time for me. It's definitely a learning time for our athletes, because all of a sudden there was something more important than what we were actually doing. Right. And that sends a great message that athletics is just part of who we are. It's just part of our society, and it's the great and the fun part of our society. There's a lot of other things that aren't that way. It's been a tough time for everybody involved. I'm talking to you from my home right now.
Right.
And yesterday I was at home at 4 p.m, and I was sitting with my wife on the couch and talking about a few things. And I thought that, you know, at 4 p.m, I don't know that I've been home ever to just sit down and talk to my wife on a weekday. Right. I don't think that's ever happened, because we never had anything this serious in this country. So, yep, it's learning for all of us.
You touched on it a little bit. I do, you know, there's a lot of runners. They either finish high school or they're finishing college, and all of a sudden, you know, they don't have that next meet, because, you know, very few of them go on to be professional. And,
right.
and they kind of question, okay, if I'm not a runner, you know, what am I? And this is kind of a little glimpse into what their life looks like after, you know, these competitions.
That's true. That's a great comment. That's a great observation. And you're exactly right. It centers you, you know, it centers you a little bit, and it brings things back to perspective. And, you know, being able to take care of yourself as a member of our society becomes huge. It becomes very important to you. You know, sometimes running, some young people, that's all they're thinking about. They don't even think about their academics. They go to class, but they don't understand the importance of it until they're probably seniors. It kind of brings things back to center for everybody. And so it's a bad, bad situation that maybe some good will come out of it for this part of our society, or right. for these years right now.
You know, I wanted to know, the NCAA has said that they are going to go ahead and give back that spring eligibility to those runners missing out now. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. They've got to give back the whole indoor season and the outdoor season to all track and field athletes. I know they're looking at it right now. I have another conference call tomorrow. I know what's going on a little bit, but, you know, we're not football. Everybody's on a fold in football. We're not basketball. Everybody's on a fold in basketball.
Right.
Track and field is a percentage-based sport, just like baseball, just like swimming. You know, it's a percentage-based sport. So I've got a couple fifth-year guys that stayed around for another year after they've already graduated.
Right.
And they had been paying over half of their education in the first place, because they were never on a full, and they are NCAA qualifiers, and they're very, very, they're some of our best athletes in the country. And now we're going to say, yeah, you got another year, but I hope it's understood that, well, they've been paying for that year,
right.
you know, and the NCAA needs to understand, well, maybe we need to compensate these young people, because this hasn't been quite fair for them. So, you know, we got to look at this whole thing. It won't be fair if they don't. If they don't do that, it will be a very poor decision on their part.
Well, I think, you know, that's something a lot of us who aren't involved with collegiate running haven't even considered is, okay, cool, you have that next year, but, you know, how do you fund that? Are you going to go back to school for another year, put off a job again for another year?
Are your parents going to pay for it? Or are you going to get a student loan? Or what are you going to do? So it's a big decision. And the NCAA needs to help those young people with that decision. It's not going to be every one of them, but it's definitely going to be a bunch of them that they need to try to help.
Yeah, you know, like we've talked about, you're very team-oriented. So what advice are you giving your team in regards to the season? I mean, knowing that it's over.
Well, you know, we will go into an active rest period right now where they can do some things on their own. They can go to the park. They can do some things. Can't use any athletic facilities. You know, our institution and the SEC won't allow anybody to use any athletic facility. I can't coach them.
Right.
I can send them training, but, you know, if you think about it right now, we just went through a pretty hard season, and we would have gone straight into an outdoor, but now it's going to be a number of months before we start talking, so it's going to be almost a year now again before it becomes really important competitive time of the year. So we got to work. We got to work some break in. We got to work in some active rest. We got to work in fall training starting again. You know, all of that is a little bit different for all of us as coaches, and so it's going to be a little bit different. Then we have those in our group who have aspirations of making our Olympic team or making an international Olympic team, right, or who I feel it's important to just go to the trials as a pretty good young one. So there's another nucleus of our group that training has got to continue, and not knowing what USA Track and Field is going to do, not knowing what the Olympic Games are going to do yet. It's getting closer, it sounds like, to us knowing something here pretty quick. But the IAAF has got to make a pretty good decision here pretty quick. So then that'll dictate how we move forward. But right now, those athletes, for me, they're on a training regimen. They have to do it by themselves, and they've got to do it on a turf field or grass fields, or there really aren't many city tracks anymore, so they can't get in. There's no such thing. Might find an elementary school that has a little jogging area or something, but right, you know, they got to find places to train.
Well, and I know here in Albuquerque, our state has essentially shut down, and yeah, the kids are under the same thing. No, you know, they can't be on the tracks or anything. And so I don't know if that's the same there. They can't even go to the high school tracks right now.
Yep. They're still allowed to go to the bars, though, aren't they?
They closed that down here in New Mexico.
Yeah, but, you know, they just did that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing. You could go to the bar, but you couldn't go train on the track by yourself.
Exactly. You know, so how do you keep those different runners motivated during this time with this uncertainty of when it is that we're going to be picking things back up?
Yeah, well, uncertainty has got to be part of who you are. Not knowing has got to be, you have to develop a strength in not knowing. We have times of the year where we barely touch on these kinds of situations, but you still touch on them. This is a period of time now. And so hopefully we've developed a little bit of interpersonal strengths on being able to do this, and you're really good ones. These are the ones we're talking about in the first place, have that ability. They have the ability to say, okay, I don't know, but I'm an athlete and I'm going to train. I'm going to train anyway, no matter what, and I'll be ready. And that's what we try to instill in them and help them to understand that that's the way it's got to be.
You know, when you're looking at those kids coming in, is that one of those traits you kind of look for as well, some of those self-motivated athletes?
Yeah, and you have a bunch of them that are self-motivated, but there's a lot of them that wait to be told, you know. And I think those kinds of changes are positive. Those are some of the changes that you got to be able to make in athletes, is that they, you know, it's pretty simple term, and I say it all the time, you know, you do this because you love it. You don't do it because I'm telling you to do it or anybody else is telling you to do it. You're throwing up over there in that can after running this 400-meter interval, and you're doing it because you love it, you know, and you're willing to do that again tomorrow. But, you know, it's that kind of commitment that you have to have, and those end up being the people that are really good, I found, with my athlete team.
I like the way you put that. You should be doing it not because I'm telling you, but because you're loving it. This is hard work.
Kind of like going out on that long run, and it's really hurting. Some people can get through it. Some people can't.
You know, in a previous interview, you had talked about, you know, talking about kids getting involved early to get to the school that they want to. You know, this year is going to be a little bit off. You've got seniors who are probably waiting to try to get that last really good time to talk to that coach, or those juniors who this is the times that they're, you know, that they were going to be showing off to those coaches, and, you know, they're not going to have those. What advice would you give to those kids for, you know, looking for next year or the year after?
Well, I you know, junior, I don't think there's a need to panic about the situation. We never did recruit juniors until a few years ago, and we always just recruited you when you became a senior. we're not going to see the same junior performances maybe, but and signing period may be going a little bit longer this next year because people have got to wait and see. And we don't know where our dollars are going to be either. There's not a school out there that can tell you right now how many scholarship dollars they're going to have for next year because they don't know what the NCAA is going to do about the returners.
Oh, good point.
So everybody's in flux. Everybody's in flux a little bit. That's why there's no national letter of intent being able to be signed right now, or institutional aid letters of intent being able to be signed, because no one knows. Are we going to be able to go above 12.6 and 18 scholarships, which I don't see how they can keep us from, I don't see how they would approve that not happening, but they haven't approved it yet. Because right now, if all of my seniors were to return and everybody I signed comes in, well, I'm over 12.6 and I'm over 18 right now. So what are they going to do? So new ones right now, yep, there's going to be some people that they need to do some pretty good research. You got some seniors, and they're going to be seniors in high school that are finished this junior year class. They better do some pretty good research, and they better look at history of programs. They better look at history of how specific disciplines have done at those institutions. Who's the coaches? Who's the head coach? What's the longevity of the program? And as important as all of that is from an athletic sample, who has my academic program?
Right.
Who offers the academic program that I want to have, and who can also provide me a great track program? And it's going to become a little bit more important for the athlete over the next year to really get involved. You can't sit there and think, well, I'm really good and somebody's going to come after me. That might not happen. You know, you better find your four or five schools that you're interested in, and you may have to communicate with them and start a conversation with them. I hope that happens. I hope some call me and say, I'm interested in your program, coach. And I've already had that happen. And I know you're not going to see me this year, and I know you're not going to see some times, and I know you're not going to see my efforts, but I'm interested in Texas A&M. I have my academic program, and I think I would like to be recruited by Texas A&M. I've received some of those kinds of calls, and that's important for all our athletes to understand. If you're really good, you still need to make some calls. You need to find the institutions you're interested in and make some calls yourself, because you might get missed.
I think that's some great advice. When a kid comes to you, you know, you haven't recruited them, they liked the school, Texas A&M had the program that they wanted, and they come to you and they say, you know, I want to walk on, coach. What are you looking for in them?
Well, gender equity plays a little bit of a role in it. I can't have more men. I got to have about the same amount of men as I have women. On a normal year, I'll lose 20, 24 athletes, a senior group that will leave, and both men and women. And I carry about 60 to 65 athletes per gender. So, you know, I've got to look at it on what can I do? I mean, where are my numbers? How good are you, first of all? How good a student are you? Because as a walk-on, you better be a good student. If you get in A&M, you're a good student, first of all. If I don't help you to get in school and you've gotten into Texas A&M, you're a really good student. Because our test scores and everything involved here is a good school. So if you get in here, like many of the schools, you're already a good student. Now I've just got to decide, are you a good enough athlete that I can allow you a spot on my team for men? Women, I can let more and more get involved, but I still got to be a little bit cautious because, you know, it comes down to travel. It comes down to equipment. It comes down to opportunities. And you got to be truthful with everybody involved there. What am I going to be able to do for you as a walk-on? And I try to treat all my walk-ons just as if they're a scholarship person. So my numbers get too big. I couldn't do it that. So I've got to be a little cautious.
You know, we touched on it earlier. You've been coaching for 47 years now this year. You know, what's changed in coaching in that time?
Well, I think education has always helped sport get better. We have some very intelligent people that are tracked. Some of our assistants are almost scientists about the sport. And so things change that way. You know, that they push the envelope. They're looking for ways to improve. They're looking for ways to train better, to stay healthy, to eat right, to sleep right. All of those kinds of things have changed over the years. We didn't really worry about those kinds of things a long time ago, you know. Now we're worried about Nike and Adidas make about 30 different training flats, and everybody seems to think one flat's better than the other.
Right.
So, and Nike makes everybody think that way. You know, there's all kinds of challenges, but all of that stuff has gotten better. Equipment has gotten better. Shoes have gotten better. Tracks have gotten better. You know, all kind of coaching, of course, has gotten better. And the science of the sport has gotten better. Athletes, young people, there's changes right now. You know, in the last 6 or 8 years, this phone we're talking on right now has kind of taken over. In many instances, it's hurt a lot of people. And, you know, because anything that's said on this thing is true. And, you know, they have a hard time seeing past that sometimes. So, yeah, and just the attentiveness to the phone and not being able to put it down and always having to have it in your hand. And it's a crutch. And their inability to track practice, what I've noticed with my sprint groups, I coach all the sprinters. We sit down and we go through some drills, and we sit down and do some flexibility work, or we're up against the wall doing flexibility work. And I used to think ladies talked a lot. you put men and women together right now, and you know, I'm trying to get a word in edgewise. I think that they don't see each other. They talk on the phone, and when they see each other, they just have such a great time, and they go. I mean, it's just a great social time, and right. It's without the phone. But so much of their other time of the day is the phone's in their hand. That's all they do. I think that's one of our biggest changes. I think that young people are maybe less social now than they were. I guess, I tell my phone, my team that text and email is information. It's not communication. And
right.
They think different than that. They think if they email somebody that person is actually going to respond, first of all, and secondly, that the person on the other end cares about what you're saying. That's not always true.
You know, and you touched on it, you know, it's information. And so do you ever talk to them about kind of limiting that information as far as this person's posting this workout they did, or, oh, I saw this person did a 10-mile run and...
Yeah, it used to be track and field news or Runner's World was our biggest problem, wasn't it? Because somebody posted the workout they did in Runner's World and everybody thought that was gospel.
Right.
And now it's just too much on, they get too much information. So in some ways it's good because they get so much information that they can't, and nobody can, you know, put it all together and make sense of it. So in some ways, I think they rely on the coach a little bit more.
That's good.
Because I think they need a little more guidance.
Right.
And that's a good thing. You know, that's good because I think you probably know the name Emil Zidapek and people like that.
Oh, yeah.
If we were reading stuff those guys were doing, if we all did it, we'd have had some of us would have been dead.
Yes.
After about a month.
Looking at those old Lydiard programs are insane.
Yeah, thank goodness we had coaches to set us in the right direction.
You know, you've been coaching again for quite a long time, and you've had a lot of success. What do you think has been your biggest disappointment in coaching?
Well, that I've been that very many times. I just don't. There, you know, disappointments are fleeting. You know, I probably get more disappointed in a young person when it comes to a specific competition and they really didn't do what they were capable of doing, that's probably the kinds of disappointments I have for them, not in them, but for them, because as you know, you only get some of these opportunities once in a lifetime.
Right.
They don't keep coming at you. And it's more of that kind of disappointment than anything. You're just disappointed that they don't understand that you don't get this day back. You know, one of my sayings at the end of every training, every team meeting, every week, is don't let the day get away. And so many of them, the day is just the day. And for as we get older, we understand more that, no, the day in the day, you can't let a day get away.
Right.
And you got to take advantage of every day. And so my disappointment from time to time is just the fact that they just didn't understand that they didn't do what they were capable of doing. And you got to learn. You know, all of these practices are just rehearsals, and all of these track meets are just rehearsals. And then you go to the SEC or you go to the conference championship, and then you go on to the national meet, maybe. Then that's the play. Everything else is the rehearsal. And if you mess up the play on the day that the play started, then all your rehearsals weren't worth much. And that's a disappointment.
Well, I think that speaks again to your commitment to those kiddos. It's not those, you don't have those main things. It's just in those individuals and getting them to where you feel like they should be, or you know they are.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right.
With all the success you have had, is there one that really sticks out to you? One that's like, yeah, you know, that's my biggest success. That's what I really hold on to.
No, I can't, you know, every one of those championships were big days. Every single one of them. No one is more important than any of the others. Sometimes our second place or third place finishes, I thought sometimes those teams were at really accomplished a little bit more than a team every once in a while that won the national championship. But it's just, no, it's every year is important. Every meet's important. And I couldn't say one that's more important than another.
What keeps you excited about the sport?
Well, that very thing we just said, not one of them is more important than the next one. It's the next one that I can't wait to happen.
And you hear that passion in your voice. And that's just, I think, something that all coaches and runners in general just need to hold on to.
Yeah, well, I know what keeps me going, and I hope others, and I know others feel that way too.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you had a kid who, you know, you knew wanted to get into coaching, or, you know, that was on the horizon for them, what advice would you give?
Well, have a philosophy. Develop your own philosophy about sport. How do you want your team to perceive you as the coach? How do you want your team to respond to you as a coach? And develop a philosophy that you can impart to others, that this is the way I would like to run this program. And as an assistant, the same thing. Because I hire assistants who I think are head coaches in their area. In their discipline, they're the head coach, and I've got 5 head coaches that work for me, and that's the way I look at it. And, you know, I want them to have a philosophy that meshes with mine, but I want them to have a philosophy about how they're going to treat people and how they're going to do things. And, you know, I wouldn't hire somebody that doesn't fit into the way I want to do things. And, you know, that may not be that person that doesn't fit me will fit somebody else. So understand. And you know, I think I learned something as I came up through the ranks. A lot of young people want to start at collegiate ranks.
Right.
And I think that's good to think that way. I just don't know that that's always the best way. I started high school, went to junior college, and then went to Division I. And I think I learned something at each one of those stops. But the one thing I learned is it's all the same. Every one of those young people that you're working with wants to be successful. None of them want to fail. And it's your opportunity to help them to succeed at doing what they want to do.
Do you have a go-to workout that's just, you know, you know this workout is going to show you where the kids are or get them prepped for that, you know, that championship run?
We'll take one discipline. Let's take 400 meters.
Okay.
Because it's one of the easier ones to talk about is that you know, if you've trained all the way through the fall and you've done some things leading up to it that help you to be able to do this, we run a 45-second run where you run by yourself and you run for 45 seconds as far as you can run in 45 seconds. You know, that one we do it towards the very end of our fall training before we go on Christmas break. And I want them to know where they are, and I want to know where they are in some regards.
Right.
That doesn't always teach me everything I need to know, but it shows me some degree of fitness and some degree of where their brain is at that point, and that helps me. But there's always, I mean, there's certain workouts all the time that are testing workouts, you know, all the way through. You know, every month, every few weeks, there's always a testing workout that helps us to understand where they are.
My last question for you is, you know, what's your go-to song to get you kind of moving?
You know, I like all kinds of music. I think it depends on the morning. And it depends on the day. I like music that I can listen to pretty loud.
Yeah.
In my own car by myself. But I like most any music. And I'll tell my athletes I'm not going to listen to something that's cussing me out. But besides that, I kind of listen to most anything.
That's all I got for you. You know, is there anything else you want to talk about or bring up?
It's a tough time, but we're all going to get through it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining me, Coach.
You bet. Thanks for the opportunity. And we had some good New Mexico athletes, and there's some more to come.
Thank you for taking the time to join me today. If you can, please rate and review, but most importantly, spread the word so we can grow this community. If you know of any runners that deserve a shout out or should be interviewed, or you just want to share your runs and connect with other people, use the hashtag RunningNM on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow me at RunningNM on both these platforms. If you prefer to reach out by email, you can find me at runningnewmexico@gmail.com. Music was provided by Philip Friedman. You can follow him on SoundCloud under DJ Teach. And until next time, keep running, New Mexico.